Funding for WBUR comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Advocates for criminal justice reform are calling on state lawmakers to make changes in order to reduce the rate of incarceration. Yesterday, legislators heard testimony on nearly 100 different reform bills, among them a push to eliminate mandatory minimum jail sentences. The sheriff of Suffolk County, Stephen Tompkins, manages one of the largest correctional agencies in New England and says reform is needed. He joins us this morning here in the studio. Good morning, Sheriff Tompkins. Thanks for speaking to WBUR's Morning Edition.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Let's start by talking about mandatory minimums. The district attorneys were up on Beacon Hill yesterday defending them. We know that you're in favor of eliminating them. Why?
I believe that the judges really should have jurisdiction over the sentencing because it allows them to really weigh in a way that makes sense. Some people shouldn't be in jail. They should be sent to a diversionary program or a substance abuse program. But the DAs, and listen, I know most of them and they're all good public servants, but they utilize mandatory minimum sentences or what we call mandos in a way to get people to plead out and then they do time and that costs taxpayers money. And so when you're talking about a low-level nonviolent offender, should they actually be in jail? I don't think so.
Well, the district attorneys, though, say that mandatory minimums are useful, especially useful in drug trafficking operations. They want the worst offenders in jail, saying that they're a useful tool in prosecuting drug dealers. Respond to that.
Well, that would be nice if they were catching the big fish. Unfortunately, they're not catching the big fish. They're catching the small fries. And so you've got the jails populated with people that really aren't the decision makers, frankly. And here's the thing. You take one guy or one lady off the block, somebody is waiting in line to fulfill that spot or fill that spot. And so I understand the concept, but they're not really catching the guys and the ladies that are really trafficking large amounts of drugs.
All right, let's talk about another issue that's come up in this Beacon Hill debate over criminal justice reform, and that is raising the age of those people considered juvenile offenders. The idea is, on the part of some, to raise the age from 18 to 21. Where are you on that?
Actually, I'm in favor of that, but it should be done over a series of years, 3 to 5 years, principally.
Why?
Because we raised the age from 17 to 18 about 2-3 years ago, and overnight 1,000 people were at the doorstep of the Department of Youth Services. And so you have to allow that department to really grow the capacity to absorb all of those bodies. And so I believe you need to do it incrementally. But here's the other thing. So the human brain takes quite some time to develop, 25, 26 years. And so to have youthful offenders, 18, 19-year-old guys and ladies, in an adult facility, I think does them a disservice. And I also think it does the correction facility that they're in a disservice.
You run a huge correctional facility yourself, the Suffolk County facility, and you've recently brought up the fact that despite the fact incarceration rates are declining in Massachusetts, spending on corrections is increasing. Why is that? Explain it for us.
So, you know, I love the CSG report that came out and the Mass Inc. report that came out that referenced that. Here's the problem. They're talking about the sentence population. If you look at my pretrial offenders, that number is, in fact, I have too many people. I'm overcrowded. And so the Nashua Street Jail is full to capacity. I now have people in the House of Correction, and I also have about 70
people. Being held before their trials.
Correct. Pre-trial. Exactly. And so that number is exploding. That's going up. The sentence number is going down. But here's the other issue, Bob. The offender that we have now is someone who's addicted to drugs, have mental health issues, and it costs so much more money to take care of that individual than it does your garden variety offender. And I don't mean to minimize by saying garden variety. I take that back. But when you have someone who has serious mental illness or substance abuse issues, when you go to jail, that facility becomes their primary health care practitioner. It costs a lot of money to take care of those individuals.
But that's not your mission, is it?
It's not supposed to be. But it is. Because of the scarcity of beds out there for mental illness and substance abuse, if a guy or lady does something wrong, there's nowhere for them to go. And so what happens? They're sent to jail. So you're right. That's outside of my mandate. But once they're – and we have no jurisdiction over that. The courts send them to us. And so we have to – We have to take care of them and tend to their needs.
Do you see this changing at all in the near future, dealing with these mental health issues with people who are drug addicted, who you're holding, whether they're inmates or whether they're in jail being held pretrial?
Yes, it better change, frankly, because we just cannot facilitate their needs. You know, I mean, it costs a lot of money to have people incarcerated, over $50,000 per individual. I have over 1,000 on any given day. When you compound that by mental illness or substance abuse issues, we have to look at a way that we have a holistic approach to how we're going to deal with people that have committed crimes. And I'll give you this also. A lot of the people are committing crimes to feed their habits. So if they weren't addicted, they wouldn't commit crime. If they didn't commit crime, they wouldn't be in my facility.
I know one of the ways you want to deal with recidivism is getting people who are released from jail educated.
Absolutely. We think it's crucially important to make sure that education is factored into this whole continuum of care. And so what we do here is if an individual comes to us, Bob, and they don't have a GED, we work mightily to help them get their GED. Now it's called a HISET. But in 2005, we shifted our academic focus towards vocational education, carpentry, landscaping, custodial maintenance, and the like, so that people learn trades. When I was a kid, used to have trade high schools. Unfortunately, the sheriff's department now are the de facto mental health, substance abuse, and schools now. And so what we're trying to do is work with people. We talk to schools, particularly the community colleges, RCC and Bunker Hill, and we talk to employers about the fact that while these individuals were away, they did learn something. Would you please give them a shot?
And you're talking about this very issue at UMass Boston today.
I'm going to UMass Boston later today to talk about how the Sheriff's Department and UMass Boston can work collaboratively to help people as they transition out of my facility into an educational environment. Listen, the idle mind is the devil's playground. If we don't do something with folks after they leave us, Bob, they're going to recidivate.
Sheriff of Suffolk County, Steve Tompkins, thanks a lot for coming in this morning. Good conversation.
Thank you so very much for having me, sir.